everyone. Welcome to episode 88. Hello.
We were talking about some real depressing stuff before the show started, so we're going to shift gears. But I should tell the story. I have to tell the story about Lou. My girlfriend, we were talking about, you know, how death and how life just sucks and life doesn't owe you anything. And for me personally, in my 40s, have really been about, like, that realization that, wow, life fucking sucks and it's hard sometimes. And because I think I've been very, I mean, listen, I didn't have the greatest, like, perfect childhood. My dad is a complicated guy, but I also look at it and say, you know, my 20s and 30s, I was fairly lucky, except for my late 30s when I went through my divorce. But I was fairly lucky and blessed that I was shielded from a lot of, like, life's misfortune.
Yeah.
And in my 40s, the blinders of that were kind of ripped off, and you go, oh, wow, maybe I shouldn't have been so sheltered because this shit hurts. Like, life is really hard. And I really felt like there was a certain period of time, especially in my 20s, where it was like, this is awesome, and life owes me everything, and I'm going to get everything I want. And, you know, you have that kind of innocent, naive, like, outlook in your 20s. But we were talking about death, and
I have to just jump in and say that I was blindsided by life at birth. I walked out of the womb being gobsmacked by the tragedy of the world.
Gobsmacked by the tragedy of the world? You're so dramatic. So fucking dramatic. That, my friends, is going to be the title of Girk's autobiography. Gobsmacked by the tragedies of the world.
And yet,
my dudes, we've titled my dudes' autobiography as well. It's called Pit Stops and Baby Mamas. Anyway, so I did tell a story when Girk and I were talking, because most of the conversation was not really fit for the podcast.
But I didn't tell you, like, last week, a girl I went to college died out of the blue, just died. And then
That on your Facebook page. I'm sorry. And you know what's sad now is that, and really inappropriate, that now when I see that stuff on your Facebook page, I laugh a little bit.
Oh, no.
Because of how much we've talked about, like, we went through the whole thing when Ruth was passing, and when you had a bunch of people die, it was like, good God, I don't want to be a friend of yours right now, because your friends are biting the dust left and right.
My friend's mom died, my friend's dad died. Within like 3 days. But again, this is where I'm optimistic, and I say, when you know people, people die. That's a direct quote from Girk. When you know people.
Listen, I know a lot of people, and I'm going to knock on wood right now. I know a lot of people, and my friends, I've been very lucky that my friends have not just been kicking the bucket left and right.
Do you think I should?
I've been very lucky. Yeah, fuck yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's just like, I don't want to be around Girk anymore.
Yeah, that's exactly what that means.
Time to go.
Exactly what that means. Listen, the universe keeps, this is what I firmly believe. In life, the universe teaches you lessons. You know, you have shitty stuff happen because you just kind of go, okay, well, what am I supposed to learn from this? I'm supposed to, whether it's something little like positive attitude or whatever. And I'm not talking about people dying, life lessons. I'm just talking about when shitty stuff happens to you, not necessarily death. But when something crappy happens and you're like, wow, what the fuck? Why is that happening to me? And then sometimes you look at it and you go, oh, because I needed to learn this from this, or this was supposed to come from this.
Sure.
And if you don't, I believe if you don't learn that lesson, when it's a simpler, kinder, gentler lesson, that the lessons just keep coming. And they keep getting harder and bigger and stronger until the universe is beating you over the head with a lesson going, wow, for real? Like, come on. So for you, apparently, yeah, your friends, that's your friends need to learn that lesson. They need to get the fuck away from you.
Sure. Sure. I guess I should
warn
people. I guess I should warn people when they meet me. Hi, I'm Girk.
I'm the angel of death.
People die. I'm the Grim Reaper.
A lot of people die around me.
So you might be an acquaintance, perhaps, you know, Christmas card.
Let's keep it at arm's length. It's like those romantic comedies where there's always like something, the sad woman who finds love at the end. No, you just need to stay sad. People just need to stay at an arm's distance from you.
Oh, I'm not going to have love at the end?
No, you will. Not in your rom-com. It's dark. Yours is darker. So
like I, you know, like I fall in love with the ghost, like the guy who's
yes.
dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And I fall
yep.
in love with the ghost guy.
Yep.
Wasn't it an Alan Rickman movie where he came back?
The one you can't have.
The ghost.
Alan Rickman.
I think there was an Alan Rickman movie where he died and came back and like was the ghost for his significant other.
No, that was Patrick Swayze, and the movie was called Ghost.
No. I think it was like Truly Deeply Madly Fucker is the name of the movie. If I'm not,
oh, I don't think
no, I have to look
that.
It up to see the premise.
I need your love.
But yes, Ghost is another movie
your love.
That would be appropriate.
Right, so the only reason I bring this up is because I told Gurk a story, and it actually is a really funny kind of, it's one of those like gallows humor stories where a friend of mine from high school, you know, we're now hitting that age where our parents or our friend's parents are dying. And her father was an older guy, and I think he was in his early 90s, but he was stubborn, like my dad, stubborn as all hell. He was going to, you know, he was a tinkerer, and they were literally like a few trash bags away from being a hoarder. He kept everything because he was a tinkerer. Two of my high school friends' fathers were tinkerers, and when you have that kind of a dad, they save everything. They're one kind of like screw loose from being a hoarder because they just think, oh no, I could use this, because they're geniuses and they make shit and they can build shit out of nothing, and so they see the beauty in everything, junk. So he had lots of junk. And he was working on a truck, and he slipped and fell, and he impaled because it didn't go in, but he hit his side. And so it wasn't like he was old and feeble and frail, and that's why he died. He fell tinkering and hit his side, and he went to the ER and did the whole thing, and they sent him home. And it turned out that there was actually internal bleeding happening in there, but they didn't realize it until days later. Yes. So he went back into the hospital, and the point of the story is that he wasn't really like someone that was kind of old and ready to go. He wasn't ready to die. He had a lot going on and a lot to do, and he wanted to get home and finish his stuff, and he didn't want to be in the hospital. But he was going south. He was going south quickly. And he was the last one to really acknowledge it. So when my friend was at the hospital and they brought in the priest to do the last rites, he was mostly out of it at this point. And but he was lucid enough to try to dodge. He was dodging the holy water. He was like, you know, he was in the bed, but he was moving his head back and forth. And my girlfriend was kind of, you know, it's sad, but she was laughing at the fact that because this is one of my friends who can see the comedy in everything. Sure. Any crappy thing that happens to her family, she'll, even if it's like wildly embarrassing, like when one of her relatives had a nick in his, they went in to do a surgery and they nicked something in his ureter, and so he started farting out of his penis.
Awesome.
And he started peeing out like sesame seeds and stuff. She tells everybody. I'm sure, you know, that the one relative would probably be like, wow, really? No, it's nothing
sacred?
Sounds
like my kind of girl. Are you sure not
but she,
about me?
Oh, it's, and the thing about it is that the person that it happened to, he didn't care either. He was, but that's just who she is. She'll tell
right.
you anything and everything, and we'll laugh about it and make jokes about it.
Yeah,
so she's
yeah.
telling us about how her, you know, her poor dying father in the hospital is still so stubborn and so pissed off. They even have this joke. They're like, we know his ghost is somewhere really pissed that, like, we let him go. And that he still wanted to be there.
Did the priest get so frustrated that he just put the holy water in a squirt bottle and just, like, squirt the guy so he could...
In my telling of the story, I'm going to say yes. But I don't know. I don't know. All I know is that I just have this image of Lou because he was a prop man for a very famous tyrant commercial director from the 80s who was well known for being a tyrant. And he was his prop master. And he did the Bartles and James series. You know, the two old guys.
Yeah.
I forgot what their names were.
Lou and something, I think. I don't remember.
Right. Well, it was named from the telling of what I heard from the stories. Lou was named after Lou because Lou, the prop master Lou, actually looked like the tall, thin one
yeah, okay.
of the two guys and almost was. I guess I think they almost like considered him for the spot, but he wasn't an actor.
Right.
So, yeah. So that's the image. That's my last image of good old Lou was him
dodging
the holy water, in the bed because he was like, no, fuck you, fuckers. I'm not ready. No, I reject your holy water. I reject your last rites. No. Get the fuck out of my room.
Well, that could kind of lead into this story about rejecting anything, quite frankly. This is an odd story that I'm going to share with you that came up.
Yeah.
It's a plot twist not even Alfred Hitchcock would think of. The elderly Brooklyn woman found this month living with the skeletal remains of her son, possibly for as many or as long as 20 years, is a legally blind hoarder who may not have even known he was there, NYPD sources said. The chilling discovery of the skeleton was...
They think that he was just in the house somewhere and she didn't realize he was there and he died in the house?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to read because I haven't read the whole story. The chilling discovery of the skeleton was made September 15th when a relative showed up at Rita Wolfenson's Midwood home to fetch her belongings and take her
Rita.
To the hospital.
Yeah.
In a debris-choked second-floor bedroom, sister-in-law Josette Buckman found a completely intact skeleton dressed in jeans, socks, and a shirt lying on its back on the thin mattress on the floor. It's like some reverse psycho scene, a law enforcement source said at the time, referring to...
Yeah, but did she not wonder whatever happened to her son?
I don't know. Investigators now believe Wolfenson may not have known she was living with the corpse of her son. Cobwebs and garbage filled the room where the body was found, as if a garbage truck had dumped its load inside. I'll give you a dump its load. The room reeked of rotting food, but not of decaying flesh. When police questioned the ailing woman, she spoke about her son as if he had simply moved out. Her brother Joseph Buckman and his wife Josette would not say where Wolfenson, whose husband died in 1987, is staying, but they were seen visiting her on Saturday at an assisted living facility. Joseph told the Post he hadn't been close to Wolfenson for years. Another relative said he wouldn't comment on the grisly mystery until after the funeral. The widow's Brooklyn home, a well-appointed two-story brick house, is worth about $700,000 had fallen into disrepair. Last week it was empty, with mail piling up, and no one has answered multiple calls to find out about this story. Authorities have not officially identified the body, but believe the man was Wolfenson's son, and that he died of natural causes. According to public records, Wolfenson had two sons, Michael and Lewis. Relatives said they have not seen Lewis, who today would be 49 years old, in
about
20 years.
Did they check the other bedrooms?
Yeah, and Michael died in 2003 at the age of 38. Boy, these guys died young.
But wait, so there's two sons. Hang on.
Yeah.
So there's two sons.
Yeah.
One of them, she said, the one that she said she thought just moved out of the house was the one that they found dead in the house.
His body, but that's who they believe.
And the other one also disappeared 20 years ago.
No, he's just dead. The Michael kid died in 2003 at the age of 38. So he's just dead. So one kid.
So one she knew died. One died at 38, and she knew he died. So both of her sons died around the same age?
No, one died at 29 and one died at 38.
Not age, sorry. I mean around the same time. Because you said 20 years ago. They both died.
Right, 2006 and 2003. Sure.
What the fuck?
I don't know.
Why are her
By
kids
the way,
so young?
Smartass, it was truly Madly Deeply. Alan Rickman does come back as a ghost, besides the movie Ghost.
No, you're just really stupid.
I'm not stupid.
I'm not stupid.
I'm the one that came up with that. Okay, so wait, let's go back to the story. So,
I'm very confused by this story.
You're hoarding that bad that you're like you're for dinner one day, and then next day he's gone, but he's laying in the
that
bed.
That doesn't surprise me. No. That doesn't surprise me at all.
In the room.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Have you ever seen the TV show Hoarders?
Yes.
It doesn't surprise me at all because the problem is, usually there's different types of hoarders. And people who are food hoarders or trash hoarders, which it sounds like she might have been a trash hoarder because there was actual trash in that room, she probably just threw her trash bags in that room. And she's blind. Didn't you tell me that she was blind?
Oh, that's right. She's legally blind. Well, she's legally blind.
Yeah, she's blind.
I have a friend who's legally blind.
Pay attention to your own story and stop Googling while you're talking to me.
I'm not.
So she's legally blind, which means that she can't see very well.
Not
and
really.
She can't smell the decay because there's been episodes of Hoarders that I've watched where the stench is so bad that the people who were coming in to help clean were literally, and these are professionals who deal with this on a regular basis, they were gagging. The smell was so bad that they couldn't hold their gag reflex back. They had to get masks. They had to, because people who are food hoarders, the stench is insane, and they can't smell it. Or people who have a lot of animals, they can't smell it. They don't smell it. And people, like, they'll literally be choking back their gag reflex saying, so, you know, do you notice that there's a... And they, you know, obviously they don't shame them because they're professionals. So it's like, well, do you smell anything that might be going bad? Any food that might be going bad? And the people will be like, no, I mean, there might be a little bit. Like, I think I left. One woman was like, no. I mean, I think I left a can of something in the fridge that might be going bad, but no. And meanwhile, the camera is panning down to like a liquefied pumpkin at their feet. And when the guy says, well, what about this pumpkin over here that's like liquid, half liquefied, covered in flies? Oh, no, I'm going to save the seeds from that. I can cook the seeds from that and use the pumpkin seeds.
Sure.
They don't think right. Their brains don't work right.
I get that.
And so the stench, the fact that she's, I mean, it's like the fucking perfect storm. She's legally blind. She clearly is a sort of a trash or food hoarder. So the smell... So now you've ticked off two of the things that would trigger her. Being able to see the fact that there's a body lying in there and being able to smell the fucking rotting flesh. I had a rat die underneath my house and the stench was so bad I couldn't even stand it.
Yeah.
And so those are two. But the third one for me makes no sense whatsoever. You know your son, you think your son has moved out. He didn't say goodbye.
I'm leaving.
Didn't say I'm leaving, didn't say goodbye.
Or
and years start to go by, and she hasn't heard from him. So is she that much of a hermit that she doesn't say to anybody else in the family or to any of her friends? Wow,
I
you know,
I've seen John.
It's been a few since I've heard from John, and you know, Christmases, and I think it's been a few like 3 to 18 Christmases, and I haven't heard from him. So this is a little odd.
18
maybe, and I'm starting to question. After like the 18th Christmas, I'm starting to go, what the fuck, John? Merry Christmas, Mom.
Right. Maybe she was
so that's the one. That's the
pissed.
That's the oh yeah, no, she killed him. No, that's the missing of our perfect storm trifecta. That's the thing that makes it not so much of a perfect storm is why did she not what she buried one son.
Right.
Why did she not wonder where the hell the other son went?
Did
I? You're like, wow, why didn't his brother even come to his funeral? Whatever. Maybe that's why she wrote him off, because he didn't even bother coming to his own brother's funeral.
No.
He died first? Did he die first? Well, there goes that theory. But still,
Isn't that nutty?
That is nutty.
How, 20 years?
Families are weird, man. Families are weird. Have you ever dealt with, because I had never dealt with this until certain people. There's certain people... Maybe I have. Not personally. I had never personally dealt with the whole I write you off thing until probably my 40s, where I started meeting people. That's not true. I did have one friend in my 30s. I had a friend who used to tell me stories about how she would write people off. And you and I actually have a mutual friend who writes people off. And so only peripherally had I dealt with – we were talking about that friend recently, last week.
Mm-hmm.
And – I have another friend who I don't think you know who writes people off. And I always was – that was my first –
I write restaurants off. I won't go to places.
That's different. You don't write your dad off or you don't write your family off. But I have friends who – back in my 30s, I had, I think, a few friends. And I remember at the time thinking, that's odd. I mean, I guess I understand that, but I had never experienced it myself until my 40s. And then when I experienced it personally – not someone writing me off, but just someone really close to me, then you kind of look at it and go, what the fuck? What is that about? How do you write people off?
Very, you know what? I think what happens is you go through these stages where you, like, put up with people's shit.
Yeah.
You hopefully talk about it. They say they're going to do better or they don't, and you accept them for who they are, but their shit just keeps is toxic. I wrote a friend off It'll be 2 years in November. Like,
yeah, but did you ever write off a family member?
Yeah, a cousin.
Mm. Was it the fucked up cousin, baby cousin?
No, I think he wrote me off, but we haven't talked about fucked up cousin baby in a while.
Go back and listen, people.
Yeah,
what cousin?
My mom's first cousin, she got on my Facebook page, and she leans a little to the right and went after my friends that were a little bit more liberal. And I kind of called her on it, and she's like, threw some God, you know, stuff in the talk in there, and I'm just like, okay. Not cool.
I think that's a little different, though. When it's like a cousin that maybe wasn't necessarily someone, were you really close with her?
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah, so that's a little different than just kind of going, okay, crazy aunt, I'm just going to stay over here, you stay over there and do your thing. And
I know,
crazy aunt, crazy, you wrote her off too, but it wasn't like you were super, super close with her, and you didn't really necessarily write them off. If you saw them at a family function, you would be like, hey, you didn't not go to family functions because you didn't want to see that particular, run into that particular cousin.
No, it helped. No.
I'm talking about completely disowning where you're like, fuck you. You mean nothing to me. I'm not gonna see you or talk to you or do anything. Like my girlfriend who, when I was in my 30s and she was telling me stories about her family, and it's like, yeah, you know, her family, she didn't really feel like she fit in. She didn't feel like they were very nice to her. But they've reached out. They have reached out to try to talk to her or whatever, and she just is not interested in anything. And then when she had an aunt, you know, that she was still close with, and then there was a falling out there, and it was like, nope, done with them too. And I just kind of look at that.
That's
and go,
interesting that you make it wow. So easy, though. I mean, crazy and crazy took time for me to write her off, but I wrote her off. She lived in another.
But you didn't avoid her. It's not like you would have gone. Would you not go to a family reunion because you knew Crazy Aunt Crazy was going
to
be there?
No, I went to my grandfather's birthday and she was there, and she repeatedly told me how disrespectful I was. And I said, well, I respect people who deserve it. And that didn't go over very well. But, you know, I don't know if
no?
she had a little bit of
not so well.
Before she died. But, you know,
she so
died last year.
Yeah.
In my string of death, she died after my mom, a couple months after my mom. Anyway.
I don't know. So there's twofold.
Well, I understand the concept of writing people off because you can only take so much of people's shit.
I guess. Yeah. I guess. That's true.
But then there's the other flip side of people who just write people off because they do it so easily.
Yeah.
It's not an endeavor to go into lightly. But some people can.
No, it's not, but some people do. And
sounds like your friend does pretty easily.
It's very frustrating. Well, she wouldn't say that she did very easily because she's got lots of different reasons for why she felt her childhood was horrible or her mother was horrible or her, you know.
Sure.
But I think when it comes to a parent, because for me that was a hard thing for me to understand, is that she wrote her mother off. And I understand that they had a very tumultuous, kind of difficult relationship that, but when she would tell me stories about her mom trying to reach out to her, her mom's, you know, memory of it. And that's the thing. There's always three sides to the truth. Mine, yours, and the truth.
Yeah.
And, or three sides to every story. Mine, yours, and the truth. And I feel like it's the same goes for everybody's, you know, everyone is the hero of their own story. So when you hear her tell the story, right. When you tell the story, she's the hero of her story and her mother is the villain. When her mother tells the story, her mother remembers it very differently. She doesn't think that my friend is the villain, but she also doesn't remember it the same way. And that's where the trouble lies. That's when you look at it and say, okay, but when it's a parent and a child, right, you know, how easy is it to write somebody off? Yeah, you had horrible things happening in your childhood, then of course you're going to write the person off, and or not write them off, but just say, you know what, I really don't need you in my life because it's too painful or it's too detrimental. But I don't know.
I had thoughts with Elmer. I wrote Elmer off for a number of years.
But I think it's hard because then you did come back around because you did essentially. I didn't ever write my dad off, but there were definitely years where the relationship was too difficult for me and it was too painful.
Write him off. You're right.
I took breaks. Oh, I'm burping. Oh, my veggie fruit juice drink was not on par this morning. But I think there's a difference. I definitely had, you know, some longer periods of time where I took breaks from my dad because it was painful and because the relationship was too hard. It was too difficult. So I would take breaks, but not like, you know, 5 years. I would just take some time where I'd be like, eh, I'm not going to call him for a little while. I'm gonna take a little time. So anyway, but we got off on a digression because maybe it's possible that was what was going on in, what was her name?
I don't know. Wendelson. I'm already.
In her family. Maybe that's what was going on. Maybe it was just like, he was estranged, even though he was living in her house. How estranged could he be?
Maybe he did drugs. Or maybe he used drugs. Alcohol.
Or.
Alcoholic.
Maybe he was a druggie or an alcoholic because they did die young, both the brothers. Only the good die young.
Yeah.
And maybe he knew his mom was legally blind and a hoarder. And maybe he was just secretly staying in the back room because he needed some place to stay, and because he was a druggie, and she didn't actually know he was staying there.
Since let's go back to the ghost story. What if she thought? What if he didn't let her know because he knew she was a hoarder and legally blind that he was actually staying there?
Yeah.
And so, since she couldn't see him very well, he never talked to her, and he just would go about his business, and she thought her house was haunted.
Maybe
I like that story.
I'm gonna go with that one.
And then she'd get all freaked out and stuff and just throw garbage at it. Like, that's why she became a hoarder, is because their house was...
That show, I got to tell you, that show is fascinating. I tried to watch it because...
I watched all the episodes. I mean, I can't...
I, the whole thing. I'm a big fan of, like, the reveal. It's the reason why you like the HGTV shows, because at the end, it's like, oh, they clean... You know, you see the house before, and then they clean it all up, and everything's spotless and shiny and great. But on that show, it's really not about that. It's not about like, look, ta-da, your house is spotless and shiny and great. It's about them trying to teach the, and, you know, guide the people out of it and doing an intervention. And it's really sad because the reasons why people turn to hoarding or reasons why people turn to hoarding are usually difficult and they can't help it. And when I realized the statistic of them being cured is really low. It's something like 95% of them go back to hoarding because it's almost near impossible disorder to cure. And that I was like, okay, I can't watch these shows anymore. Then if I know that all of these people are just going to go right back to it. Like there was one guy, he hoarded trash as well. And underneath his bed, I don't even think he had a bed frame. I think he had like, he just had the little teeny metal frame that his mattress, mm-hmm. that he had one mattress sitting on. And he would drink liter bottles of soda, and he would just shove them underneath his bed. He would just shove trash underneath his bed. So, like, his bed, I think, wasn't even really touching the ground anymore because there were so many bottles underneath his.
Oh, my gosh.
And the bathroom, there was so much. He was so embarrassed and humiliated, that, which is why he didn't want to ask for help. He couldn't even get into the bathroom anymore because there was so much, like, trash and shit and just literal shit and grossness happening in his bathroom, and he was in a teeny apartment. So I think he was being, and that's the thing. Yeah, the reason why these people ask for help is not because they want help or not because their family members are forcing help on them. It's because their one episode, the family was going to lose their child.
Right, right.
And another episode, it was like they're going to be evicted. They've got so many warnings that they're about to be evicted.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I have a family member who hoards mostly paper, like old mail and stuff. And boxes.
And I got to tell you, back in that, remember when you still lived here, you still lived in L.A. when we had the Northridge earthquake, right?
Yeah, that was the first earthquake.
And that was a big one. There was an old couple who died. There was an old couple who died in during that earthquake because they were hoarders and because they had like stacks and stacks of newspapers and stuff and they couldn't get out of their house. It fell in, the stuff fell in on them, caved in on them, and they couldn't get out.
Yeah. Well, and I think I, you know, personally told you the story about a friend of mine who, whose parents were hoarders, and she was really, like, adamant about it, but then subsequently became a hoarder herself.
She did?
Mm-hmm. And
what was she hoarding?
Food and wrappers and...
Oh, no. Why did she?
I think some mental health issues crept up. So I would like to see how many, when they do go through these hoarding cases, how many people have some sort of psychological.
So what did you do when you watched that happen?
It was something that it didn't know about it until like a big incident happened, and then it was obvious. And so then there were friends. I wasn't able to at the time. There were friends that went in to help with the situation. She's getting treatment and is doing better from what I understand. And I went out there in July just to see what I could do. But the hoarding aspect had been, you know, she wants help. You know what I mean? So.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's good.
And it wasn't just, loads and loads of laundry, 6-7 loads of dishes thrown away, bags of stuff thrown away.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah, hoarding's it's a tough thing. So,
it's tough.
Where else can we go with
this? Hey, listen, I'm going to do a hard right turn here. It's not a good
Thank
segue.
God. Can we
Have you ever had... I'm not about to. Have you ever had a kidney stone?
No, thank God.
So, that was one of the stories I was going to tell you. A couple of weeks back, my dude, he puts the kids to bed and he comes into the bedroom and he's so funny. I love him to death, but he is so dramatic.
He has a lot of maladies. I think you got sold a bill of goods.
Fuck, this last year, he's had so many maladies. He's so over hospital bills and doctor bills. It's so funny. He's had so many surgeries. We're going on three surgeries, a bulging disc, and now, no, I did not get a warranty. The warranty expired, unfortunately, after our first year of marriage. Our anniversary was in April, and it expired. So all of this shit has happened.
You sold a bill of goods.
Yeah, lemon law. I think I need to look into the lemon law. So he's had three surgeries on his wrists, his hand, and he has a bulging disc. And now a kidney stone. So he comes in. And the thing about my dude is he frustrates the shit out of me because he's one of those guys that doesn't like to complain about pain or he doesn't like to complain about anything, so he doesn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. So you never know what's going on with him, which is why he had the first surgery in his wrist because apparently there was a bone in there that had been broken for probably 10 years. Oh, and he just never thought to, like, say anything or go to the doctor. He didn't have a lot of pain. Every now and then there would be some pain in there, but he just kind of was like, whatever.
Okay.
So aside from that, so he'll do that, but also, and he won't go and get help or ask for help because he just doesn't talk about it. Oh, I don't want to complain. I'm not a complainer. Okay. So there's a difference in complaining and actually asking for help, but whatever. So he doesn't like to complain about stuff. However, when he does decide that it's time to ask for help, it's like life-shattering. So for him, he goes from 0 to 160 in half a day because all of a sudden he's dying. Whatever it is that's happening, it's like I'm dying and I need to get help and this needs to happen yesterday. So that's when I get frustrated because I'm like, but didn't you feel anything come? Well, I didn't want to complain. Okay, well now, but okay. So by the time he actually tells me something's wrong and is asking for my help, he's you know, in his mind, he's dying. It's cancer or it's something. So he busts into the bedroom and he's like, I think I have a kidney stone. I have a kidney stone. Well, have you ever had a kidney stone? No, but this has got to be what it feels like. This is awful. So, of course, in my mind, I'm trying to be sympathetic, but there's also that small part of my brain that's like, oh, fuck. You know, I'm sure it's fine. It's not, you know, I mean, I don't minimize his pain because I know if he's saying that he's in pain, it's got to be really bad.
Sure.
I lose a little bit of my compassion because it's like, why are you waiting until 9 o'clock at night? Like, why couldn't we could have seen a doctor before. So now, of course, it's, you know, DEFCON 10 and he's dying. And so then he goes out of the room. I'm trying to watch TV. He comes, slams into the room, very dramatic, and his mother was staying with us at the time, which was hilarious because, of course, his mom would be like, oh, no. So then he, like, sweeps out of the room, and I just continue watching TV because it's like there's nothing I could do
sweeps
for you.
He out and sweeps in. You make it sound like he's a...
He does. He's very dramatic. He's very dramatic.
Yeah.
He, the door flies open, and he comes in and, you know, drops this bombshell, and then he's gone. And then... A little while later.
I want to hear that like ding 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 ding.
Like the Benny Hill music?
No, no, from the silent movie when there's something really dramatic happening.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's like that for sure. It's like that for sure. And then of course I'm like, okay, well, I've had friends who've had kidney stones. Unfortunately, there's nothing you can do for it. We Googled it, and it's like you got to drink a lot of water. You got to, you know, there's nothing you can do. You just have to.
Big, they break it.
You have to suffer through the pain. If it's too big, they'll break it apart. So he's like, okay, I'm gonna take a bunch of. I said, go take some painkillers. You know, he takes a bunch of painkillers, and then we go to bed. But of course, I'm such a bitch because I'm trying to sleep, and I'm like, because he's like, and you know, every time he rolls over and he's tossing and turning.
Right? You can't breathe. It hurts so badly, you bitch.
And
you are such a bitch.
So he goes, I'm like, come on. So I wasn't minimizing the pain, but I was just like, seriously, if it's really that bad. So of course he wakes me up at 2 a.m. and he's like, you need to take me to the ER. I went, really?
Wait, I need to take it. Because you're the kind of person, from what you're telling me, is that at 11 you should have said to him, go lay on the couch. Instead of you getting out of bed and going and laying on the couch or to another room, you would...
No, because I was asleep. You know how when you're in that half-awake, half-asleep state where you're not awake enough to actually get up or make any yeah. conscious, like, cognitive decisions?
Yeah.
You're just awake enough to be like, what is happening? Why do you keep moving around? You know, you keep waking me up.
All right. So now you got to go to the ER. I'll take my medicine back.
He wakes me up at, like, 2 a.m. I got to go to the ER. I can't take it anymore. And I, you know, and of course, in my mind as a woman, I'm like, I fucking had a baby. Suck it up. You're fine.
Push this little stone that has jagged edges that's going to rip apart your ureter all the way out through your pee hole.
Right?
Get over it.
Mine was 9 pounds. He can handle a couple of millimeters.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, in my mind, I'm thinking there's nothing they're going to be able to do for you. All they're going to do is give you painkillers, and he can't really take painkillers. He can't take any, like, opioid-based painkillers because – They make him all, like, he's super sensitive to meds, and they make him all fucked up and aggro. So I'm like, what are you going to do? You're going to go there, they're going to prescribe you some painkillers, and you're not going to take them. And then we're going to be right back here with a gigantic ER bill, and you're still going to be writhing around in pain doing nothing. But I was like, oh, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go get you some painkillers. So I load him up into the car, and we go. And, of course, in my mind I'm thinking – why can't there be a 24-hour urgent care? Because urgent care is way cheaper on your
sure.
insurance than an ER is.
Wait, did you wake up the mother? Because that would have added to the drama.
Fuck me. So she, yeah. We had to wake up the mother because luckily, thankfully, listen, I was counting my lucky stars that he had his kidney stone when his mom was here because the kids were all asleep.
Did you have all the kids? Mo is very upset by this story.
We had clearly Mo's had a kidney stone, so we would have had to wake up all the kids if the mother hadn't been there because they could have stayed at the house. But whatever. So luckily the mother was there. We told her that we were taking him to the ER, and she was like, okay. So she was fine. Her husband had kidney stones. So we go to the ER, and he's in, like, massive amounts of pain, and they were intaking him saying, yeah, it sounds an awful lot like a kidney stone, but of course we have to, like, do our due diligence and run all the tests and do the urine test, and if the urine test comes back and whatever. It's a big, long story, but suffice it to say, he was right. It was a good call to go to the ER because they did do a little bit more than just, I mean, mostly they just gave him painkillers, but he needed them. And he did actually take them because he doesn't like taking painkillers, but he did actually take them because he said the pain was so intense.
Did they want to break it apart?
Projectile vomiting at the in the hospital, projectile vomiting from the pain. And I was like, oh, shit, I'm a bitch.
Yeah, you are callous.
I am super callous because, you know, there's that part of you when you've had a baby that you sit there and go, stop being a baby. I know it hurts, but you're going to live. Because men have a tendency to be bigger babies than women do with most things that involve pain, with being sick, with being, you know, injured, with being, women are just like, oh, man, that hurts. And men are like,
What say you?
yeah. Because, you know, my sister will always bitch about when her husband gets sick. They'll have the same exact cold, and she'll be managing the house, managing the kids, work, going to work, doing all this stuff, and her husband will be laying on the couch like, oh, I can't. I'm sick.
Can I get a popsicle?
Can you get me? And she'll be like, can I get you what? I'm sick too. You get it for me. So regardless, I have been meaning to ask you ever since then, because I kept calling my one girlfriend who has had a couple of kidney stones, and she always got hers when she was out of the country.
Oh my God.
So she would just have to work through the pain, and her husband gets them. So they travel with, because they actually gave us four different prescriptions. So not only did we spend the night in the ER, because we didn't leave there until like 5 in the morning. I think we got there at like 1 in the morning. We left at like 5:30. We had to go to the CVS in the middle of, you know, at 5 in the morning, which is kind of odd. There was activity in the CVS at 5 in the morning.
Sure, people have first shift jobs. They've got to get their stuff done.
I guess.
Or they get off first shift and they go to do their shopping, go home, and go to bed.
They actually gave us four different prescriptions. They gave us two different types of painkillers. They gave us I got the muscle relaxant that specifically works on like the ureter or whatever to relax it for it to pass, and an anti-nausea in case he felt like he was going to throw up again. But I did.
How long did it take to pass?
Well, and they did end up having to do the X-ray because the first test did not come back conclusive for a kidney stone, even though they knew it was. They had to do the X-ray, and it was only 3 millimeters. So I gave him an old strainer that we then threw away to pee into so we could save it, because you're supposed to at least try to save it so the urologist can test it and find out what happened. But it took – then the pain went away, and he felt like maybe he had passed and he just didn't feel it. And I didn't really have the heart to tell him that he probably would feel it as it was scratching and clawing its way down his wiener, trying to get out.
Shards of glass inside your pee hole.
It took another day and a half, and then it finally came out.
Is not necessarily small either.
Not when you think about your pee hole and the size of that tube that it's coming down.
Right.
But ask me, this was 3 weeks ago, has he gone to a urologist yet?
Keek, has he gone to a urologist yet?
No, he hasn't. No.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He hasn't.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? I hate to make sweeping generalizations.
Because
with
men are annoying and they won't go to the doctor. Because men don't take care of themselves. They don't take care of themselves.
Now, conversely, I have a friend of mine who makes me laugh because he is the unmanned man. He goes and gets his teeth clean every 6 months. He goes for his physical every year.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's, like, a little hyper about it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are certain men who do, but, you know, and we're gross generalizing men. But, I mean, you are.
You know I don't make judgments against anybody.
You are. Right. That's the lesson that we've learned out of this, is that men don't take care of themselves. He still has not gone to the urologist, and I've enabled him over the years because I've just gotten frustrated and been like, here's your appointment for the dentist. This is what time it's at. Here, this is your appointment for this. Go do your follow-up appointment. And I've enabled him, so now I think he waits around for me just to do it.
Nope, he's going to have to suffer the consequences.
Yeah, although you know what? This is what I've decided. In my my WebMD doctorate, because I do have a doctorate from WebMD.
Who doesn't? Go on.
Right. We're all doctors. I think I know why he got it.
What did he eat too much of?
Splenda.
Oh.
Splenda. So here's a tip for you. The disclaimer on this is I am not a doctor. I only play one on TV. Sucralose.
PSA of the week?
Yeah, sucralose will give you kidney stones. So listen up. If you are out there and you are drinking or eating massive amounts of sucralose, you best stop. Otherwise, you're going to give yourself a kidney stone.
Just eat real stuff, real butter, real sugar.
Because I did. I started researching in the hours that I was in the ER. My dude was all drugged up and asleep in the bed. I'm sitting in the chair wide awake at 4 in the morning. Trying to figure out what the fuck caused a kidney stone. And he had just started. First of all, He's very, very sensitive. I've never met anybody. So it has good and bad signs. Like if he's going to, if there's something that has really good restorative, regenerative, whatever, excellent properties in it, it will happen for him and it will happen quickly. Conversely, if there's something that has bad effects or any sort of a side effect whatsoever, even if it's rare and random, he's going to get it.
Yeah.
He will get it. So he was started drinking a protein shake that he found at Trader Joe's, whatever. And he made one for me, and I tasted it and was like, that tastes like shit. You like that? It was chocolate. I was like, that tastes like it's got a sweetener, an artificial sweetener in it. It has chemical taste. He liked it. So then I start researching on Google at 4 in the morning, and there was a medical study done that has a connection, a correlation between sucralose and kidney stones, because there's something that sucralose does that keeps what something from binding and passing through some walls.
It would have to be a calcium, because that's what kidney stones are, basically.
Well, calcium, yeah, but there's something specifically about sucralose that keeps a process from happening that causes the calcium buildup.
It's called putting more chemicals in your body than your whole can possibly deal with.
And he was drinking those every single day. Now, granted, it was only for like maybe a month, which generally would, you know, people would think that it would have to take longer than that, but he's hypersensitive, so if something was going to happen quickly and if he was going to have a bad side effect of something, it would be that, and that was the only thing he changed in his diet. I'm telling you, it's sucralose.
Okay.
Stay away from sucralose, people.
We'll leave it on a high note. Stay away from sucralose. But once again, an uplifting show from Girk and Keek.
Death and destruction in a funny way.
Stuff in your pee hole.
Stuff in your pee hole.
Well, great. You guys can't wait for episode 89. Neither can we. Because that's, you know. We like to switch it up, though. If we were funny all the time, like really funny like we are, if we were really funny all the time, there wouldn't be really anything to look forward to. Because you'd just be like, oh, I'm going to laugh again.
Listen, there's a reason why the masks are comedy and tragedy together.
Ah, you know what? Because if you can't frown, you can't turn it around and make it smile. Boy, am I deep.
I'll give you a chance to work on that. Maybe next week you can make that tagline a little better. You can polish that up.
Right, no, but if we can't make you sad, then how can we make you happy? How about that? If we can't make you sad.
That's what we do here at Girk and Keith. We bring you down into the depths, so it doesn't take much to make you happy.
It works, doesn't it? Okay, you guys, thanks a lot for joining us this week. We will see you next time.
Bye. Bye. I need someone who's clean with a dirty mind.